Case number 21-3094, United States of America versus Lamont Johnson, also known as Black, appellant. Mr. LaCar for the appellant, Ms. Kelly for the appellate.
Good morning, counsel. Mr. LaCar, please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Good to see you all. As the court is aware from our briefs, this is not a routine sentencing case. It's a de facto life sentencing based on constitutionally unreliable information. In the limited time I have, I hope you'll indulge me perhaps a minute to 90 seconds to give you my three core theories, if that's possible. The first issue I want to talk about is the relevant conduct. The government doesn't really seek to justify the district judge's finding that my client had engaged in multiple discussions of multi-gallon purchases of PCP. That's simply unfounded. We have put all the relevant text in the evidence, there were no cooperators who testified in the appendix. No cooperator testified at the trial. No cooperator testified at the sentencing, even though those cooperators are clearly under the government's control. What the government has done here is switch courses. They want you to become a court of first view, not a court of review. They want you to decipher near incomprehensible quoted conversations and try to figure out what happened several years ago. They, in effect, want you to reward them for not calling any of the cooperators at the trial or at the sentencing. And I don't think the court should do that. They also want the court to consider proffers, what the law declares as notoriously unreliable proffers, inculpatory statements of co-defendants that were not presented below the district judge. Now, we've objected. That's not fair. That's something that should have been explored below. If they didn't want to call the cooperators, I can understand that, but that's the responsibility of the government. It's their burden to establish relevant conduct. And our position is, quite simply, this is a Stover case. This is a case of United States versus Daniel Stover that we cited in our brief. Second, and it should be remanded as a proper fact finding. The role in the offense, That's a simple one. This case does not meet any of the criteria that the courts typically rely on, that the courts of appeals typically look to decide what somebody's role is in the offense. Now, in this case, if you look at the government's pre-sentencing memorandum, they depict Mr. Johnson as the drug supplier for the entire Jahi Marshall drug trafficking organization. That's what they put, and it's in the record in their sentencing memorandum. Now, if Mr. Johnson was a supplier for the entire network, how could it thrive when he was unambiguously bereft of drugs, unable to pay the rent, unable to meet his car notes? It doesn't make sense. He didn't recruit anybody. He never met Jahi Marshall. He wasn't on the scene. He didn't share profits. At the best, their argument then shifts to, well, maybe he controlled his co-venturer. But the law is, you don't control your co-venturer.
So I do have a question or two about this part of the case, the managed supervisor one. But can we go back to the drug quantity for where you started? So I take it you don't disagree with what the government says at page 49 of its brief in terms of the quantities. In other words, if it's true that there was a gallon involved and then 8 ounces, and then 16 apiece, that amounts to over 3 kilograms.
I do disagree.
No, I'm just talking about the math.
Well, I want to talk about the math because that's a valid question. I'm glad you.
So I guess I'm surprised that you disagree with that. Well, what I took to be the principal submission is that there's just not evidence that supports the amounts. Not that the amounts don't translate into 3 kilograms. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but on whether the evidence supports the amounts, and it seems like the big question is the 1 gallon, is whether there was in fact 1 gallon that came from the West Coast.
3 gallons, to get to level 32, you have to have 3 gallons or more of either pure PCP, I'm sorry, 3 gallons of a mixture containing PCP, and they don't have that.
Why do you say 3 gallons? Isn't the expert testimony 22 grams per fluid ounce?
Here's the problem. The expert, that's his testimony, but here's where he misses it. First of all, let me give them the gimmick, what they seized from Mr. Johnson's car. That's 1.45 kilograms. That's about essentially 90 ounces, if you do the mathematics. And I've done a calculation table last night. If you gave them the 40 ounces, which the evidence doesn't support, if you gave them, there's a mixture of 40 ounces of PCP, you still come out under what you need for 3 kilograms or more of a mixture. So the math doesn't add up. This is another reason.
I want to answer though to the question of, do you think that it's clear error for the district court, if the district court relied on 22 grams per fluid ounce, that was clear error? And if so, why?
Well, first of all, that backs into the standard review. Do I think it's clear error? Absolutely. But I also think you should give the entire methodology a fresh look, as the majority of circuit courts of appeal do. This circuit has never directly ruled on methodology. And I've urged in my opening brief and my reply, there should be a de novo standard review. And the fact of the matter is, the judge's findings, when you read the sentencing transcript, they just don't make sense. The way he approached it, there was some confusion in the record.
Tell me why 22 grams per fluid ounce, even if we review this de novo, shouldn't be used. I mean, where was that contested below?
Which grams you want?
22 grams per fluid ounce.
We got to
convert from liquid in ounce gallon measurements to grams and kilograms for the purpose of the sentencing table.
I believe that in the sentencing memorandum below, we did contest the method. He did contest the amount. And if you calculate, if you look at a mixture, if you take a mixture, a PCP, because that's what they got. Wasn't pure PCP. If you have 1.45 kilograms, that computes out essentially to just about 50 ounces. 50. If you gave them 40 ounces, it still wouldn't get them to where they're looking.
How are you doing that conversion? What unit of conversion?
What ratio?
I did kilogram to ounces conversion, Your Honor.
Kilogram to ounces by fluid ounces or by weight? See, the problem is that a gallon is 128 ounces, but that's fluid ounces.
Right. That's what I did.
So that is not the same as how many ounces in weight a gallon of milk or a gallon of water or a gallon of PCP weighs.
The problem is it's a mixture. It's not pure PCP. There are two alternatives. If you have 300 grams of pure PCP, that gets you to level 32. If you have a mixture, you have to have 3 gallons or more of a mixture to get you to level 32. As the Barrows case that we cited in our brief says, caution has to be taken when you're looking at quantity. And what the district judge's core finding was that they shifted on. His core finding was that there were multiple discussions of multi-gallons of PCP.
Well, your brief at page 4, opening brief, says, because based on the intercepted conversations, that he was seeking the gallon. Your brief acknowledges that.
I think that's right, but there were not multiple conversations concerning multiple gallons.
So I guess if he was seeking a gallon and the record supports that he got a gallon in beginning of October, and then there were a couple of prior sales of 8 ounces, 16 ounces, if you add that gallon to those prior sales and use the 22 grams per fluid ounce conversion, then you're over 3 kilograms.
Here's the problem about argument. There are no original evidence of prior sales.
Well, wait, hold on. Am I misreading the... Doesn't the expert testimony in this case, which I think is undisputed, it says that a gallon plus 16 ounces is more than 3 kilograms. Am I reading that wrong?
I'm sorry. I'm having difficulty.
The undisputed expert testimony in the case. You said there was nothing in the record that supported. But the undisputed expert testimony in the case says that a gallon plus 16 ounces is more than 3 kilograms.
What?
Am I reading that wrong?
No, you're not, Your Honor. That may be the undisputed expert testimony, but that's based on the assumption that all of the transactions were sales. They're at the key issue here.
No, but you in response to Judge Wilkins, you admitted and you said in your brief that the wiretaps show at least 1 gallon, show a gallon, and later the wiretaps also show the 16 ounces. And those are both in your brief. You concede the wiretaps show both of them. No. And then you have an expert who says those two add up to more than 3 kilograms.
There's a mistake here. What I'm saying
Wait, where's the misstatement?
The mistake is the expert's testimony is based on the assumption that there were prior sales in late July, July 26th, 28th. There was veracoded discussion that nobody can decipher. You can't figure out what happened here. The people who were engaged in those coded discussions, specifically Cavron and Jamar Gage, were never called by the government to testify. Nobody testified to that. Although the experts assumed that there
was evidence about what the coded discussions meant. You know, maybe that testimony was reliable. Maybe it wasn't. It came in. And the jury must have found it credible because they convicted your client, and you're not making a sufficiency or any other argument challenging the conviction. So if the coded discussions were sufficient to justify a conviction, why aren't they sufficient to justify sentence?
Because of all due respect, Judge Wilkins, you're looking at the wrong end of the telescope. Again, the 1.4 kilograms that were seized in October, that's a gimmick. The jury finding was 1 kilogram more. There was a discussion below in the record of should we have specific jury findings as to the quantity. The government decided not to go over that. They went with 1 kilogram more. So, of course, the jury found 1 kilogram more. Let's be realistic. That was what was seized. The question, what this case turns on, is the difference between what was seized and those amorphous conversations that the district judge's findings just don't address. His findings are, quote, there were multiple discussions throughout the case, multi-gallon deals. There is no such discussion. I have spread every single one of those texts in the record. There nobody testified to support that. It was the expert whose testimony is based on his own assumption. It was his assumption.
His testimony is based on conversations where he's saying Slim or Shorty is going to get me a hole, or I'm going to get a hole this time. And then testimony that usually comes in a gallon, sometimes in a half gallon. And the inference being that if he's saying a hole, then he's referring to a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that unreliable for the purpose of making sentencing?
It, as I've said, the district judge didn't make a correct finding here. These are coded discussions that nobody, the actual participants, the people who were best situated to know what happened, were not called by the government.
So there might be, I mean, maybe it's true that there could be better evidence, but the question that we're reviewing is whether it was clear error to find that the 3 kilogram threshold was found. And as I read the government's brief, the 3 kilograms, the biggest amount that gets you to 3 kilograms is the 1 gallon PCP shipment from the West Coast. That's the bulk of it. That's 2,700, but per the government's calculation on page 49 of its brief. Can I just finish?
Right.
Government's calculation on page 49 of its brief. So if it's not clear error to think that there's a gallon, according to the government's calculation, that gets you to 2,700. That's pretty close to 3 kilograms. Now, I'm going to assume, you can contest it, but I'm going to assume that the 22-ounce ratio is okay. I'm just going to assume it for purposes of this question. Let's just assume that that's okay. I guess the question then becomes, is there actually enough evidence that there was 1 gallon? Because that gets you pretty close on the 22-gram ratio. And on the question of whether there is, in fact, 1 gallon, there's enough evidence of the 1 gallon. I guess my question is, as Judge Wilkins said, there's the reference to a whole one that was stated by Johnson. And then there's the testimony from the government's expert at page 590 of the joint appendix that says typically at least a gallon is shipped from the West Coast. So why don't the combination of those at least suffice to show that it wasn't clear error to think that there's a 1 gallon amount from the West Coast? And if there's a 1 gallon amount from the West Coast, then per the 22 gram ratio, which I'm assuming is okay, that gets you pretty close in and of itself to 3 kilograms.
It's pretty close, but it's close. It's like horseshoes and hand grenades. You've got to be right on. It's not quite there.
Okay, so you may think that there's not enough other stuff, and may we can talk about that. But I just want to know what's wrong with that to get you to 2,700. Assuming that the math, the 22 gram ratio is okay, what's wrong with that construction of why there's in fact a gallon?
I think what's wrong with it is that there's no testimony or anything, there's no real testimony other than a casual reference and what sees isn't enough.
No, but there's not just that, because there's the reference to a whole one at right. Johnson, that's in the record. And then there's the testimony from the government's expert that from the West Coast, typically at least a gallon. And the testimony, as I recall, was to the effect of, no one's going to bother to get something from the West Coast unless it's a pretty good quantity. So typically it's at least a gallon. So you get that plus the whole one, and that gets you to a gallon, which gets you to 2,700, which gets you to pretty close. Then there may be a debate about whether you can get past the 3 kilograms, but I just want to know what's wrong with getting us pretty close.
I think what's wrong with it is that there's no the actual participants weren't called. The people who knew, who were in a position to know what happened, theoretically, you assume we're not called a testimony. This court is sitting here trying to guess what happened. And is there a discussion of a whole one? Yes, I'll grant you that.
And do you think a whole one means a whole gallon?
But I'm not saying that's a whole gallon. For all I know, it's a mixture of something. But I know what the expert testified.
Yeah.
The problem is that what the government is, again, asking you to do is to make the decision that should have been made below by the district court. And the district court's view was mistaken. But there were multiple discussions throughout the whole case of multiple gallons of PCT.
So your argument is that the finding that was made by the district court was that there were multiple discussions of gallons, and there's no evidence for that, and we can't reconstruct the finding on appeal to one that comports with, you know, a defensible view of the evidence.
Not
you
only,
have to vacate the sentence and send it back.
Not only is that my argument, but I'll go you one better. Who caused that problem? It was caused by the government. It was their sentencing memorandum and their position at the sentencing that he was the supplier for this whole network. That's just physically impossible. There was a guy referenced in the record to a guy who was a supplier named Eric Scott in the spring. My client happened to be picked up at the very tail end of a 2.5-3 year investigation. And what happened was they overheard him on a wiretap, and they had what the law recognizes as confirmation bias. He's showing up late. He's the guy who must be the main supplier. But he wasn't. There's no evidence of that. What happens here is, as you essentially surmise and conjecture as to what the relevant conduct is. This is, and it is a departure. I see
let me ask you a question about the enhancement for supervisor or manager.
Sure.
With respect to Ms. Johnson, if there's evidence that she didn't really want to be involved with drugs at all, but he compelled her to do so by calling her, badgering her, et cetera. Why isn't that control? I mean, control is getting someone to do something that they don't want to do. You're controlling.
Well, first of all, if it were Ms. Johnson alone, it would be a 2-point enhancement, not a 3-point enhancement, because he clearly had nothing to do with the Marshall Ring. He's not their supplier. He's an independent trader. But with respect to Ms. Johnson,
and why is it only a 2-point enhancement?
Because she's the only person he's dealing with. You have to look at a hierarchy.
But aren't there 5 people or more total that are involved in the conspiracy?
Under Graham and under Weaver, it's a Seventh Circuit case that I submit is actually elegantly written. Under both two cases, what one looks to is there a hierarchy. The only hierarchy in that case would be he and Mrs. Johnson, but there is no hierarchy of he and Mrs. Johnson. It was a one-off episode. She was perfectly happy to get that gun out of a house, let's be realistic, and get that cooking stuff out of a house. But there's no evidence in the record that she was a participant in that. And I suggest the Mankiewicz case out of the Seventh Circuit, we discussed in our opening brief. In Mankiewicz, the son ran a large marijuana operation. He asked his father, would you put some of the bales on the other side of the barn? And father said, yeah, sure. I'll be happy to do that. That's not a managerial.
Was anything found in the premises of Mrs. Johnson as far as drugs?
Boy, that's a good question. I don't remember. Perhaps I'm certainly being the inventory or in the trial transcript. I'd be happy to submit something.
I'm just the search warrant that was executed was not at the residence that she lived.
Yes,
is that what you're saying?
I think it was.
Well, that's kind of my point, is that the wiretaps appear to show that she didn't want to be associated with any of this.
And that's why.
And yet the stuff is found at her house.
Well,
that would imply that it was put there kind of against her will.
She didn't want it.
And that would imply control.
No, control. What control requires is more than a one-off situation. And that's the Weaver case. What control requires is a sort of a continuous situation where one has economic coercion over somebody else. There's no showing that she's a participant getting money for this. There's no showing that she's doing anything to facilitate the offense. The fact that her husband may have used the house to store PCP, which we know PCP dealers tend to do, that doesn't make her a participant. Judge Hogan did not put an enhancement in there for running a crack house. I'm sorry, for a PCP house. That's an important fact. He recognized the house wasn't being used for anything other than perhaps storage. And that's done by him, not by Karen Johnson. She's not a participant, because what the law of participation requires is that more, as I said, than a one-off episode. It requires acquiescence, it requires dealing over time and furthering the offense. She's his wife. She wasn't happy about this, but that doesn't make her a participant.
Make sure my colleagues don't have additional questions at this time. We will give you some time for rebuttal.
One last question. Sure. Whose name was on the lease?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What's the evidence about whose name was on the lease?
In the lease? Probably. I don't want to guess. I would assume both. I'm a little leery about making assumptions. Rather shabby apartment, but the picture's there. Probably rather a big scale drug dealer.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Kelly?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Catherine Kelly on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, in this case, the District Court properly found by a preponderance of the evidence that there was indeed support for a level 32 drug quantity, that Mr. Johnson was indeed a manager or supervisor and thus was subject to the enhancement, and that the credible threats enhancement properly applied in this case.
So can we start with the drug quantity? So the way that you presented the argument in your brief, the part that gets you the closest to 3 kilograms is the gallon.
That gets you 2,750 grams.
Right, so that gets you pretty, that's the bulk of it. Correct. In other words, you're not going to get there but for that.
That's right.
Okay, so on the gallon, what is there in the record that supports the gallon and that marries with the way the district court, this kind of top line that the district court articulated in support of this 3 kilogram threshold? Because what I see is one quote that said, I had a whole one there this time. And then that alone, there's no testimony about that I could find about what a whole one means. A whole one what?
Your Honor, it was the government's position that a whole one was a gallon because of the expert's testimony, which was that if you're going to go to the expense of $32,000 to $36,000 a gallon to ship it from the West Coast, that you were indeed going to get a large amount.
And so
his experience.
I didn't even see anywhere, but you can definitely correct me. I didn't see anywhere where the government actually said that a whole one means a whole gallon.
Maybe that's true. It's my understanding that throughout the case, the government's position was that a hole was indeed.
But I mean, it might be the position in somebody's own mind, but I'm just looking for something. And was that ever articulated anywhere that a whole one means 1 gallon?
I don't believe that there was testimony that a whole was a gallon.
And was it in a sentencing memo? Because I don't think I saw it in the government's sentencing memo either.
The government referred to 1 gallon, but I don't recall any statement in the government sentencing memo that a whole is equivalent to a gallon.
So where are we getting this argument that the government's position has always been that a whole one is a gallon? Because the government never said that out of their mouth in the district court.
Or on the page.
I'm trying to recall the closing argument, Your Honor. And I'm sorry, I don't have a cite right at my fingertips, but the arguments that the government was making definitely were that he was getting, based on the expert's testimony, that he's getting at least a gallon from the West Coast, because that's in line with what.
Well, so one thing that I thought was interesting is that the brief doesn't say at least a gallon. It says 1 gallon. So I mean,
right.
I think
the expert said that in his experience that the suppliers or the people who were drug dealers in D.C., when they ordered from the West Coast, they would get at least a gallon, sometimes more. But that in his experience, it was mainly that he had seen 1 gallon.
Right. And so then the government's theory was that Johnson got 1 gallon.
Right.
Not
during
that he got 8 gallons.
Between July, that he ordered, I believe it was around the end of August. And our main support for that is the call that he had with Mr. Prelo on the 22nd of August, 2017. And that's cited at Joint Appendix 664 through 670.
Right. That's the statement. I had a whole one on there this time.
That's right. And I shouldn't say that it was our position that he only received that 1 gallon. So to the extent that I may have indicated that earlier, that's not correct, because there were additional statements in there in that same call indicating that he had done this 3 times previously. This is a call, if Your Honor will recall, that he has first realized that day, August 22nd, that the money he has given to the suppliers from the West Coast, he was expecting that supplier to come visit him. And then he got on social media and realized after the supplier failed to visit him that they had in fact gone back to the West Coast without delivering the drugs at that time.
Right. But in your brief, that you did the prior stuff is in a footnote, in footnote 26 on page 49, as I see it. And so what you're really relying on in principle force is the 1 gallon.
For the 1 gallon, we're saying the whole on page 664, yeah. And then on page 668 of that same conversation, Mr. Johnson is going on to say that I ran a certain amount 3 times, you know, and then
right.
Saying
that's in a footnote. That's in a footnote,
yeah,
in your brief.
Yeah.
And on the whole one, I still, if there's nothing that the government ever said, might have thought it, but the government said on the written page or in an argument that a whole one means 1 gallon, then how do we reach the conclusion that the shipment was in fact a gallon?
Well, we did say at the sentencing, Your Honor, and of course I would like to point out too, the prosecutor told the court at the sentencing it was prepared to discuss the actual drug quantities. The court did not take mm-hmm. the prosecutor up on that. But at the end of the sentencing, when they were talking about the government's position that Mr. Johnson should get a 405-month sentence, the government did note Mr. Johnson's acquisition of a gallon of PCP. That's at page 159 of the government's supplemental appendix. And then also mentioned drug expert Cardinal's trial testimony saying that when you receive a gallon, that you would take that gallon of PCP in order to make back any profit after paying, you know, up to $36,000 to ship it from the West Coast. A dealer would, or who was supplying others, would then cut that to make it 2 gallons, which is supported by the expert's testimony. In that sense, we did talk about the acquisition of the gallon. We didn't at that point say a whole equals a gallon, but it's quite clear that we're talking about that gallon that's being discussed.
Right, but I think there was arguments that at least a gallon was, and maybe just 1 gallon was received. What I didn't see anywhere is something that tied the comment, the statement, the whole one, to 1 gallon. I didn't see anywhere that the government said what is meant by the statement, a whole one is 1 gallon.
I don't recall a statement as specific as Your Honor said, but I would just point out that at the sentencing, we were talking about the acquisition of a gallon, and we had put in the testimony at trial of the August 22nd call.
So help me understand something. The draft pre-sentence report is submitted to the parties, and it says that Mr. Johnson is responsible for over 3 kilograms PCP. There's a written objection that's filed to that. That says, no, the jury only made findings that would support over 1 kilogram. And the government's opposition, as I read it, didn't explain any more than the draft pre-sentence report as to how we got to the 3 kilograms. Am I missing something?
I don't recall anything specific in the government's sentencing memorandum that went through that calculation in regard to the 1 gallon. I recall there being additional, we made a more general reference to wiretap supporting that a gallon was delivered. And then went into discussions about the 32-ounce sale in July 2017 and then the additional arrangements for at least 8 ounces.
So basically the government's theory below was that if the district court were to find that he got a gallon, and that would have been around shortly before the arrest, right?
Correct, yes.
And then there was a prior sale of 16 ounces or even that would be sufficient in and of itself to get you over the 3 kilograms.
That would be, yes,
plus 16, but the government would say there were a couple more transactions that were supportable by the wiretaps, 16 and an 8, whatever.
Correct. We were saying that there was a 32-ounce sale in July, 16 each to Mr. Gage and then to Mr. Tabron, and then an additional arrangement where Mr. Johnson was selling an additional 8 ounces to Mr.
But your expert also testified that it's not necessarily that you always get a gallon, you could get a half gallon.
He said that was possible.
And from the wiretaps, it appears that Mr. Johnson was searched and arrested within maybe 2 days of getting the shipment.
I believe it was 4 days. The drugs came on the 9th, and he was arrested on the night of the 13th. And there were additionally two situations in between there where he's meeting with Mr. Prelow, and he's also arranging to meet somebody who was not identified, who said that they were by the shrimp boat, and he was clearly in those calls going to bring drugs. So,
and what he's got is less than a half gallon when the search is executed, right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I haven't done the conversion to what 1,429 grams would be back into gallons, but he did. There were 1,429 grams of PCP found in the 36 bottles in his.
And that had been diluted down, right?
It was 12% purity, I think. I don't know what purity level he got it at, for instance, but there's certainly evidence that he was.
Well, what's the evidence about what purity level you would get from the West Coast in your gallon?
I don't recall there being testimony about the purity level of what we'd normally received from the West Coast. But certainly there was evidence that Mr. Johnson did cut the PCP because there was starter fluid bottles found in the apartment.
Well, that's my point, is let's suppose he got a gallon and he cut it so that he would have 2 gallons, mm-hmm. and then he could sell that. So how is it that he gets a gallon on the 9th, he cuts it to make it 2 gallons or some greater quantity of a gallon, and you got evidence of maybe a couple different sales, but yet they only find about a half gallon at his house if he started out with a gallon?
I don't recall there being any evidence in the record of him specifically cutting this shipment PCP. So I don't know.
Well, let's suppose he did.
Suppose he didn't.
Then he sold a half gallon between the 9th and the 12th, according to your theory.
Which is possible.
Where did it go when your evidence is two transactions of not nearly that amount?
Well, the evidence is a call with Mr. Prelo on the 11th, which is at Joint Appendix 744, and a call with an unclarified person, which is Supplemental Appendix 88 through 91, where he's appears to be making a sale. But the point is, Your Honor, is the question is that you just needed at least 3 kilograms of a mixture and substance that contained PCP. So whether or not it's been cut or not, during that time, you still have, given the calculations at page 49 of our brief, we still had over 3 gallons.
I understand that.
Or over 3 kilos.
But my point is that even if it's never been cut and he gets a gallon on or about October the 9th, on the 12th, he's got about a half gallon.
So
2,700 grams, according to you, is if a gallon translates into 2,700 grams, and he's got about 1,400 or so grams, that's about a half gallon.
Yes, sir.
So even if nothing was cut, then that means a half gallon was sold or given or something happened to it in those 3 days. Between him acquiring it and the search warrant being executed. And I guess all I'm saying is that how does that line up with the evidence of what he was doing with in those 3 days? And it doesn't seem to line up.
So we would say that it does line up because of the calls that I mentioned before with Mr. Prelo and then the additional person saying that they were going to meet.
And the discussions of those, I thought that the discussions, at least with Mr., what's his name, Prelo, were a pretty small quantity, and he's arrested with something like 16 ounces, right?
Several days later, he was arrested with, I think it was.
In other words, those discussions that you're relying on don't get you to the entire rest of the half gallon. They get you.
They don't mention specific quantities that would.
There's no reason to think that it encompasses. There's no affirmative reason to think that those discussions encompass. Let's just stay with the math that encompasses the entire rest of the half gallon, or even something close to it, because we're talking about what was ultimately found as ounce, pretty small ounce quantities.
It's not entirely clear what amounts were passed over at that time. But it's also, though, I think it's very important to note, too, that you're talking about what is he responsible for. It doesn't mean that if you're found with half a gallon in the end, that means that's all that you arranged for.
Because if he got, I mean, I think it's true that if he got the full gallon and the 22 ratio works, that gets you pretty close. Then the question becomes, is there enough evidence to support that in fact the full gallon came from the West Coast to him?
And we believe there is, given the calls and given the amount that was found on him at that time. And indeed, as Your Honors have pointed out, the additional drugs that were found on Mr. Prelo, which we had obviously point would have been that was from the gallon. But again, we're dealing with a preponderance of the evidence standard here, which the court used and the government used and met. And additionally, we have, in this case, a situation where
got to review a finding, and the finding is that there were multiple discussions of gallon, right? That's the finding that the district court made.
That's what the district court said, Your Honor. But I think that the true point here is not the number of discussions that was had. The question is what was discussed. And here it is, the call on August 22nd shows a hole which the government had interpreted as. And that's based on the expert's testimony.
But nobody made that argument at the sentencing.
Well, we said at the sentencing that Johnson had acquired a gallon PCP.
But you didn't say because he said that he was getting a hole.
We did not say that specifically. No.
I mean, how are we supposed to know what this, I mean, we're a court of review. How are we supposed to know what the district court actually found, where PSR doesn't articulate a theory as to why there's 3 kilograms or more? The government's theory doesn't appear that it articulated in argument or at in its sentencing memo, doesn't appear to match up with what the district court found. So how are we supposed to review that?
There was additional evidence in the PSR, Your Honor, which the court adopted in its statement of reasons afterwards, talking about the phone calls on the 26th through the 28th of July that supported the additional 40 ounces. And then there was discussion of the wiretaps supporting the larger amounts. And I will say that it did not specify an amount in that situation. But we did lay out at sentencing as best we could, since the court did not take us up to explain each of the actual drug quantities that we were prepared to explain. But the evidence that we've stated here today about prior transactions, the whole, and then the receipt of the drugs in October, plus the transactions.
You're kind of making it seem like this is the district judge's fault because he wouldn't let you argue what you wanted to argue. But that's why you file a sentencing memo, to put in the record what needs to be put in the record and make the argument. So maybe I'm sensitive because I'm a former district judge. But you seem to be throwing the district judge under the bus. This was something that was in the prosecutor's control.
I certainly don't mean to throw the district judge. Apologize if I've made it sound like that. But given, we would just say that the evidence that was at trial, the court's statements at the sentencing itself, he mentioned knowing of gallons and other quantities of PCP, which would be an apparent reference to the July sales and the at least the amount that came at the end in mid-October, that there was a sufficient finding, particularly by preponderance of the evidence. The evidence is certainly in the record. And if I may just
Can I just ask you just to succinctly just address this? Suppose, let's just assume, arguendo, you'll resist it, but let's just assume, arguendo, that the reference to a whole one means nothing, because there's nothing that ties a whole one to some quantity. It could be a whole gram. It could be a whole ounce. Let's just assume that away. Mm-hmm. If we assume that away, then how do we sustain the 3 kilograms that's predicated on a gallon?
It would really be on the expert's testimony that when somebody is being supplied PCP from the West Coast, which is clear from the calls, that in the expert's experience, that a gallon was the most common amount.
And is that the government's position that even if you totally discount the whole one because there was never link made to what a whole one means, that we affirm a district court's finding of 3 kilograms that's, as the district court described it, based on testimony and I can't remember exactly how the district court articulated, but that what we do is we sustain it based on the government's expert's testimony that it's typically at least a gallon, but sometimes a half.
Yeah, and I would say that the reference to half gallon was a very minor one. But mm-hmm. the expert was saying also that sometimes he's seen, 2 gallons as well. So, but in his experience, his most common experience in this area,
okay,
that he was getting, you would get a gallon.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. If I just may make one brief point about control of Ms. Johnson,
yeah.
The defense counsel has said that this was a one-off episode, and I just wanted to make clear that this was not. We mentioned a September 11th text that Mr. Johnson sent to Mrs. Johnson saying that he needed to get into the apartment because he needed to make some hits.
So I do have a couple of questions about that. So all it's a husband and wife who are talking.
They were estranged at the time.
I get that. But still, I mean, they are husband and wife. And just it's typically in these kinds of situations where you have a manager-supervisor relationship, there's something more than this. I mean, this is the kind of discourse that often happens among people who share a house. It doesn't strike me as obvious that somebody's managing somebody else with whom they share a place, and especially if they're in a spousal relationship. And yes, they're estranged, and so you can say, well, they didn't really share this space. But they have some joint dominion and control over it. And it just struck me that the kinds of conversations that are going on are typically the kinds of conversations that occur among spouses. I need you to do this for me. I need you to make sure my, you know, my dinner's warm by the time I get home. It's just, that's not, nobody would say that somebody's managing their spouse. That's just the way that spouses talk to each other.
Well, the way the evidence came in, first of all, Your Honor, I want to make clear that they were not only estranged, but they were not living together. Only Mrs. Johnson was in that apartment. And on several occasions, including September 11th, and I believe it was October 9th, he was saying, you need to let me in. So this isn't even a situation where he apparently has a key to the apartment. He can't even go there on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just a please warm up my dinner kind of conversation. These are texts and wiretap calls where he's ordering her to bring him his cooler, his bottles, his funnels. He's insisting that she let him come over to the apartment that night, which was, I believe, on the 11th.
Is that not how estranged partners or spouses talk to each other?
It just seemed
typical of the way people might interact without having a managerial supervisory relationship.
The reason he's making these insistences is that he needs to get to his drug paraphernalia. He needs to get his bottles. He needs to get his cooler so he won't be able to smell the PCP when he's transiting it. And it's clear that all his conversations in telling her what to do are related to the drug transactions and his desire to get these items out on the street. And it's not a matter of just insisting certain things. They're saying, you've got to bring my gun downstairs. You've got to, you know, get the cooler into the back of my Cadillac and so forth. And she clearly acceded to this, even though it didn't seem like she wanted to in times, but which again just shows that he is controlling her. And it was neither a one-off experience, nor was it a situation where this is just a normal situation between husband and wife, just talking whether they're estranged or not. They're specifically, he's ordering her around in regard to his drug trade.
What of the argument that even if we were to accept that, it's at most a two-point enhancement instead?
But it applies for the three-point enhancement because all you have to do is manage or supervise one person who was criminally responsible for the offense and a criminal activity that included five or more people. So it meets all the requirements for a subsection B enhancement for three levels. Certainly, if there was some reason to in this case, it would be possible to apply the level two enhancement under subsection C. But given that the government showed by preponderance of the evidence and the court accepted it on that standard, there's no reason to disturb the. And I would just note one final point is that there is case law, including the Clark decision, that indicates that just because you're somebody's relative, you can still be in that manager supervisor position. So we would respectfully request that the court affirm the judgment of the district. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. LaCar, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Let me see if I can get it down to 1 minute.
Good.
35 years of a man's life, a de facto life sentence, hangs on Delphic discretions and unfounded findings by the district judge. And I noticed that we've had 3 Circuit Court of Appeals judges of the second most powerful circuit in this country sitting here 40 minutes trying to interpret a muddy record. That's not the role of this court. This case should be remanded for all and all reasons, but certainly as to the relevant conduct. Government counsel couldn't say, and to her credit, she strove mightily, she couldn't say, she said it's not entirely clear, it's not specific. The findings on relevant conduct were driven by the government over trying the case and by the government sentencing memorandum which portrayed my client wrongfully as a supplier for this whole network, which certainly was a large network. As the managerial role, let me in, you have to let me in, Weaver. Weaver answers that. A one-off episode, she was nothing that Karen Johnson did facilitated the offense that my client unfortunately engaged in. I thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
I have any questions.
Thank you. I don't believe so. Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel. We'll take this case under submission. Mr. Lacar, you are appointed by the court to represent appellant in this matter, and the court thanks you for your assistance.